CF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
All right, we're going to get started. I'm sure he'll be back. Good morning. I am Nick Tunney. I'm Senior Software Architect for About Web, consulting, training, placement firm here in Rockville. I'm here to speak to you today about variables and conditions. This is a CF 101, kind of an introductory level. If you guys have any questions, since we are a small group as we go through, feel free to ask them. What we're going to cover today are the just basics of variables. What is a variable? Different types of variables in just generalized overview of languages, as well as specific to Cold Fusion. We'll talk about scoping variables, lifespan of variables, and at the end of the presentation, we'll get into a little bit of conditional logic, so you guys can take this home and begin writing programs immediately. So, what's a variable? Variable is very, very simply just a container. What it does is it gives constraint and context to our values, because we can have a value, but without a variable or without that name value pair relationship, it means nothing to us in our programming. We call these things variables because they're dynamic. We generally don't know what a variable is going to be at the time that we write the program. So if I'm writing some kind of an entry page and I want to say, you know, welcome Nick at the top, the my name variable holding Nick is a variable in that it's going to change depending on what user has accessed my site. So it's dynamic. It's different for every person accessing the program. Variables permit our programs to work with values that can't be known at design time. So if we're outputting dates, we can grab the current date. The program understands we're going to put that in our name value pair, and we're going to maybe change that as the date counts up or down. Variables have data types. Every different type of data, or every different data type, holds a different type of data. So in our first example, we have a string. It's a hello world. It's a sentence. It's alphanumeric characters. I can have any numbers, any letters, any symbols. Int, numeric, 42, 56, 78. We can also have numeric types such as real. We can have numeric types such as decimals and doubles, where we allow decimal places. Structures are a special type of variable. It's just a container of name-value pairs, but several names, several values, all ordered so that we can use it throughout our program. And a new to Cold Fusion is objects. In this case, we have a car object. You can think of it kind of like a structure, except that we can perform methods or call functions on this object, such as get model, get make, and it's going to return a specific string or an integer or a structure or a query, whatever we define it to do. There are two different types of languages, data typing. Strong data typing, which is not Cold Fusion. We use this in languages such as Java and C#. We have to declare the type of value or the type of variable when we instantiate that value. So I have string, my name. I know that every time I call that my name variable, I can only put alphanumeric characters into it. Every time I call my age, I can only insert an integer or I'm going to get a typing error. Company would be an object in this case. Every time I access my employer, I'm going to expect to see an object of type company, and I'll know that there may be a get payroll, and it's just a little bit of expectation. Like I said, these strongly typed languages, I must declare the variable type when I instantiate the variable, and they remain that variable type throughout the lifespan of the variable. In weak data typing, the language is actually going to try to interpret what type of variable we're using depending on what function we're applying to the variable, depending on what we're doing to that variable at the time within the program. It's really important to note that weakly typed languages are just not untyped languages. When CodeFusion accesses that variable, or when Smalltalk accesses that variable, it does assign a type. We're going to go to some code here in a second, and I'll show you how it does that. So, let's make sure I have Dreamweaver. In a weakly typed language, I can do things like set cf set x equal to 1. If you notice the double quotes around it, I'm actually setting that 1 as a string variable. So at this time, ColdFusion, when I first set x, knows that 1 is a string. I can set y equal to a numeric type, such as 2. If I add x and y together, in a strongly typed language, I would now have an issue. It would say, hey, I can't take, you know, a string, and I can't convert that somehow into a numeric type and add it to the number 2. Well, ColdFusion, in all of its beauty, can. So if we just have a simple CF output block down here, yep. And we're going to set z equal to x plus y. When we run this, you can see that it is now 3. So what ColdFusion has done at runtime, we set x equal to the string 1. We set y equal to the numeric value of 2, and then we added these. ColdFusion first tried to take x and said, okay, it's a string, and then it saw the plus sign and said, okay, can I convert this into something such as a numeric type where I can add this to whatever our next value is? It knows that there's that inherent conversion there, and it was able to add x and y and come up with z, which is 3. So that's what happens in weakly type languages. There is a type at runtime. However, it's going to try and change that type depending on what functions we are using against that type. All right. In ColdFusion, we have several data types. We're just going to cover a few. First, simple data types. These are prominent in other languages as well. If you're programming in JavaScript, if you're programming in, you know, Smalltalk or Perl, we have strings, which are alphanumeric characters. Lists are also a special type of strings, a comma delimited, tab delimited, space delimited, anything. It's still a string, however, ColdFusion has special functions for dealing with these alphanumeric lists. We have integers. Integers are all numbers, whole numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, negative 1, negative 2, etc. Real numbers. Real numbers are decimal places. It can store a larger amount of number. Boolean values are values that will always evaluate to true or false. It could be yes, it could be no, 0, 1, negative 1, but it must evaluate to true or false in the end. Date time values are values of date and time. They're pretty much exactly how it sounds. We then get into some special data types in ColdFusion. Binary data types. You use, say you wanted to store an entire image into a database, which in most cases I don't recommend, but we can take that binary data and ColdFusion understands how to handle the data, and we can actually insert that into a database, such as a blob. ColdFusion, since ColdFusion MX, when 6 came out, we now also have objects. There's a create object function. I can create a com object. I can extend the Java class as an object. Web services, which are getting big right now. And also ColdFusion components, which is something that I deal a lot in. I create all of my objects in ColdFusion components. It would have been 2 years ago that you could first start modeling objects in ColdFusion. Whenever they first began CFCs, ColdFusion components, which was version 6. Okay. Object data type. We have three different complex data types we'll be talking about in a little bit of detail here. We have our arrays and structures, which exist in other languages as well. We also have a query data type, which is a special ColdFusion data type. So what's an array? I'm going to read this horrible definition to you, and then we're going to kind of simplify it. An array is simply a set of sequentially indexed elements having the same type of data. That's important to note. Most of the time, an array is the same type of data in every element. Each element of an array has a unique identifying index number. Since it has an index number, these are actually ordered name value pairs. Changes made to one element of an array do not affect the other elements. I'll be able to demonstrate this pretty easy in the next picture here, but we need to understand what an array element is. And an array element is simply one value put into an array, we'll call an element. So first we'll deal with one-dimensional arrays. It's just an ordered stack of elements. Here I have an array called myArray, this visual representation. I have three array elements. You see, I can number them 1, 2, and 3. So technically, I can have them in alphabetical order. Kelly, Nick, Simon. Every time I call 1, it's going to return Kelly then in that case. Every time 2, it's going to return Nick. And if I loop over this, I can actually then order my array so that I get the results I expect when I output. How do we call these crazy arrays? Well, we refer to each element using the notation. It's called array notation, oddly enough. It's a square bracket with a number and square bracket. So if I had written out in hash marks for Cold Fusion inside of a CF output, my array of 1, that's how we read it, my array square bracket, first element and your square bracket, it's going to print out Nick. Same with my array of 2, it's going to print out Kelly. Single-dimensional arrays. Two-dimensional arrays. This is where it gets a little bit more tricky, still very, very handy. Notice that we not only now have numbers going down the side, we also have numbers going across. So if you think about this, it actually is every array element is also an array in itself, hence the two dimensions. Going down, I'm also going out. So say we wanted to store first name and last name, like in our example here. Nick Tunney, Simon Horwith. So if I wanted to get Tunney out of this and just output a last name, same notation, as opposed to just having one element identifier, I would now have 2. So first, my array 1, 1 tells me I want to look in the first array element's first array element. So that would give me Nick. If I wanted Tunney, I would look in my array 1, first array element, 2 for the second array element, and I would just output Tunney. In the example, we also have my array 2, 2, which would give us the second position of the second array, and we would get Horwith. There are also three-dimensional arrays, and you can get very, very complex. I've never had the need to use a third dimension of an array in programming. However, be aware that it does exist, and it's kind of cool just to play with if you're bored some night. I haven't found a lot of real programming. I mean, there are if you have complex data sets that you're pulling out of a database and you want to store that data for later use, you may want to use a third dimensional array.
Time could easily do that. If you say, here's my class list for this month, and my class list for next month,
time could be the third dimension, yes. When you start looking at three-dimensional arrays in your programming, it's a really good idea to take a step back, you know, just kind of remove yourself from it and say, why do I need this third-dimensional array? Could I be storing structures in a two-dimensional array, which makes your programming logic a lot easier than trying to keep, you know, but if you're going to loop over that data and you need to get a specific cell out of that third dimension, may make sense still. But you definitely want to just take a look back if you see yourself using the third dimension and make sure that it makes sense. Cold fusion structures. Cold fusion structures are an awful lot like arrays, but unlike arrays, each data object generally is of a different type. So when we were looking at, let's look at our single dimensional array. Notice that every array element is a first name, okay, in our two-dimensional array. Our first element is a name, last or second element is a last name. So going down, if I look at it visually, they're all the same type of data in every one. Not just that it's string data, but also that it's a string data of type, you know, my name or whatever. In a structure, this is different. Structures are unordered, first of all. And it makes sense that they're unordered since every structure element is going to be a different data type. So if I'm modeling an object, or I'm, in this case, I want to model this classroom. Speaker is Nick Tunney. Topic, we're talking about variables and conditions. And is it active? Yes, it's a Boolean value. So not only do I have different data types, such as Boolean, such as string, I also, the data is of totally different types of data, such as speaker and topic. Structures are great for this unordered data. We refer to them a little bit different when we address them. As opposed to the array notation where we can say, I want the first element, I want the second element, I want the third element, because when we're looping over them, we want to get them in order. Now we just want a specific element out of that structure, such as the speaker name. So if I had created a list for all of the classes here, all the sessions here at CF United, maybe I just want to output the speaker, so I'd loop over all of my structures, and I would say, this structure is called MyStruct. I would call it MyStruct.Speaker, and I would see Nick Tunney output. The other way to refer to a structure, if you do really like that array notation, you can still use your square brackets. Inside double quotes, it's very important, you can put your, we call these keys, speaker, topic, and active, or structure keys. I can put my key name, which is topic. Like I said, it has to be in double quotes, otherwise it tries to evaluate that as a variable, and I would see variables outputs, or variables and conditions. Okay, structures. You can also mix and match structures and arrays. Say I have 50 classes here at CF United, and I wanted to list them in order by time, so I'd pull all of my data out of the database. I could then insert the first structure into an array, the first one, the second structure, by time into the second element of an array, loop over the array, and each array element becomes a structure as opposed to a string or an integer. So we can give some sort of ordering to structures on a much higher level. Queries, the third data type. This one is just more of a cold fusion data type. When you query using CF Query, you get data back from your SQL database, from your MySQL database, whatever you're using, Oracle. If you think of it as an Excel spreadsheet that they're giving you, we have many columns which will match our database, however our database schema is laid out, and we're going to have many rows, one row for each record within our query return. Here, let's say we were pulling products. So we have an ID for the product, some kind of primary key, we have a price, and we have a description. In our database, whatever search we used in our SQL select statement, we're returning two rows. So how do we get this data back? We know we've done our CF query already. We've named our CF query MyQuery, so it's going to create this. It's kind of like an array of structures for us. It's a query type. To refer to the price of the first product, and you can order the different products by using an order by clause in your SQL. So if we wanted to get $29.99, I would just refer to it in dot notation, just like we would structures. It would actually be myquery.price. And that would have the first row, $29.99, value would now be output. What if I wanted to do the second row? Well, I can use array notation. MyQuery.price in square brackets, element 2, will now give us the price $59.99. This is good if I just wanted to pull one value out. However, most of the time I want to loop over an entire record set that's returned from a query. ColdFusion gives us two options for this. The first is CF loop, and we can set the a query attribute, so query equals my query, and it will actually loop over each row. We can also do CF output and specify a query attribute to start looping over each row. And in that case, we do not need to use the down there where it says products.price. Element two, we can just use products.price or myquery.price. Every time it iterates over our record set, it's now going to output the current row's data. Okay? Queries. Objects. We're going to talk about objects on a very low level. But one thing I do recommend as you're developing in your programming style, definitely be learning objects as soon as you can. ColdFusion is not an object-oriented language. However, we do have a lot of object-oriented principles that we can apply to ColdFusion that's going to make both your life easier, and if you're programming within a team, it's going to make their life easier. So I definitely start looking at CFCs and objects. It's just my two cents off the side here. But an object's job is just to encapsulate data, to encapsulate behavior. Objects are indeed real-world representations, so anything in this room is an object. I could object model it. In this example, I'm using a car. A car would have several properties. We're going to keep all of these properties private to our object, so we would have a make property, model property, maybe a color. We don't want our users to actually be able to affect the value of make directly. So what we're doing is a principle called encapsulation. And by encapsulating it, we have all of these accessor methods. The accessor methods we call getters and setters in ColdFusion. I would have a get make, and I would have a get model, and a set make, and a set model. And the user doesn't have to understand how it's being set. The user doesn't understand anything. Say I'm getting a price, it doesn't have to know that I'm calculating 6% sales tax and I'm throwing on the 20% the dealership throws on top. All the developer knows is I'm going to get a price and it's going to return an integer. So we're hiding all of that business logic from them. That's kind of the purpose of encapsulation. There's also special methods such as add gas or accelerate where we can have it do special things that an object can do, like a car we can add gas to. Now that we have a very basic overview of variable types within ColdFusion, let's get specific just to ColdFusion. And let's talk about scopes. ColdFusion scopes, all variables have a lifespan. And a lifespan is, here's where I create the variable, here's where I set the variable, and here's where I can no longer access that variable. Also have a scope, which is where is this variable visible within my program? If I set on my main template, I set something called X, and I set it to 1. And then I'm calling a custom tag somewhere in ColdFusion. Can I still get to X at that point, or do I need to implicitly pass that through to X? And that's where our scope comes in. Now, in ColdFusion, we take that lifespan, we take that scope, and we kind of package it together, and we call it a ColdFusion scope. They're bound together, and if you want to refer to a scope, we use dot notation, just like we were doing for structures and queries, and we simply prefix the variable name with whatever scope we want to use. ColdFusion has quite a few scopes. I'll kind of buzz through these, and at the end of this, what I want you to get out of this is, do I have to prefix my scope variable, and how long is my scope's lifespan, or how long is my variable within a certain scope's lifespan, and who is it available to within ColdFusion? So first one, which I'm sure many of you guys have used, is the application scope. Anyone using application.cfc in programs yet? Okay. How about application.cfm? Okay. Well, to be able to use the application scope, you need to be using one or the other, so we need to tell our application that we're binding our application together by a single name. If you're using application.cfm, it's the name attribute in the CF application tag. It's the this.name if you're using application.cfc. Any template underneath that application can share this one giant scope called application. We use it to share constants between different pages in your application. As long as that application is active, we have access to that scope. Those are persistent variables. The only time that you'll lose those variables is on a server crash, on a server reboot, or if no one's hit your page for the application timeout time period, which is, I think, by default, 2 days. So if no one has hit your page in 2 days, you've now lost your application variables. Next time you come back, you're going to need to reset all those or have your application.cfc reset those for you. The attribute scope. Attributes in caller, they're both kind of special in that we use them with custom tags. Custom tags, is everyone using custom tags? No one yet? Custom tags just allow you to kind of encapsulate data, push it off, so if I wanted to calculate tax, I could call CF underscore tax. I could specify special tax for each state. I could pass in the state that I want to be calculating tax on, and it's going to return whatever the current tax rate is. So the values scope, when I push values to the custom tag, is called our attribute scope. It's only available within the current request, and a request is defined from the time a user first hits the top of the page until the final text is output to them in their browser. So it's a non-persistent scope. It's only available to us within one call to a web page. Attributes is also only available to that specific custom tag. When you're using attribute scope, you must prefix your variables. So if I was sending in state, I would prefix it attributes.state, and it will be available then as attributes.state within my custom tag. Caller is like the other side of attributes. It's anything I want to return back to my calling template from the custom tag. So if I want to set a tax rate back, I would set caller.taxRate equals whatever depending on the state that I sent in the first place, and it would return that back to the parent template, and I could then refer to that and carry on with the rest of my program on that page. CGI variables are they're just available everywhere. That actually comes from your client's browser. It's stuff like what IP address, what page do they come from, what browser type, what do they support in their browser. This is real handy for getting some metrics on your site if you'd like to log requests. You do not have to prefix this, and it's available for just that one request. Client variables. Client variables are kind of neat. If you were traveling through my site, I could set a client variable on you, whether it be in a cookie or wherever. And if I set that you are is logged in, that would then persist with you through each request. The only time that we kill these client cookies is when the client session ends. When the client variable's lifespan ends. We can do that in the ColdFusion Administrator or specifically in our application.cfc or application.cfm. Cookie variable. Cookie's cool in that anywhere across any application on one server, I can set a value, and as long as I have access to that cookie through my application, I can pull that value back in the next time that they visit. Say they go from one of my sites, say I have two stores, from one store to the next, I still have their name, I still have maybe their ID, so I can kind of track what they're doing in both of my stores. There is a little bit of overhead for client variables, but it's neat in that, or for cookies, but they're neat in that I can get them across domains. Form variables. Every time you post a form in ColdFusion, you have a form scope all of a sudden. It's every form element from the previous page that is passed through if it has a value. I can now, if I had please enter your username and password, and it was uname and pword, on my action page I would have form.uname and form.pword, and if I would output those I could see, or I could check them against a query and see if they match their user record. Form variables are only present for that one action page request. They're then destroyed. So when they click submit on their form, goes and it posts through the action page, at the end of that request, they're gone. You no longer have them. So if it's a variable that you're going to need, such as a first or last name, we can use one of our other set scopes, such as a client scope or such as a session, transfer that form over into one of those, and we can now persist those variables. But forms are not persistent by default. You also do not need to prefix forms. I could just call it uname. I could just call it pword, and it would understand where it was getting it from. Request is a neat scope. Think of it as a global scope for one request. When I was talking about, let's say, attributes. Attributes scope is just in a custom tag. I can't get back to that attribute scope after I'm out of that custom tag. Well, what if I wanted to pass, I was doing some kind of recursion and had 10 different custom tags that are just looping over each other, and I still wanted to have the a variable that I'd set in my master template, and I don't want to pass it through to each individual. I know I need it in each individual template underneath. I would set it into the request scope. Request is available to every single template within the current request. You do have to prefix the request scope to use it. Server scope. Server scope is good for not a lot. I don't use server scope all that often. It's good for constants that you want to pass across many, many, many applications. Say you have some sort of a password, like a master username or password, that's the same on every application. Well, where application scope is only within the current application, the server scope is available to all applications on one server. So it doesn't work if you're passing between several clusters of servers, but within that one server, you can share variables across all your applications. You do have to prefix these, server.applicationpassword or server.company name. It only times out, it is another persistent scope, it only times out by whatever you have set in the ColdFusion administrator. So that variable is going to live until X amount of time that you tell it. Session has to be my favorite scope of all. Sessions are tied to users. If I was in an application and I had a shopping cart, as long as I stayed within that same application and didn't go off to another store, I can pass all sorts of information, such as this person's logged in, this is their first and last name, their favorite color is blue, so I want to turn the text blue, or I want to turn the use blue images around everything. I can store a shopping cart in there, and as opposed to putting it in a database and then worrying about having to pull that back out of the database if the user doesn't, you know, come back and finish the purchase, I can leave it in a session. As long as you have your session timeout high enough, you can actually, they can leave, they can come back to the site, and you'll still know who they are. And ColdFusion does that by putting two cookies on their browser. When they come back, we can say, oh, here's the rest of your purchase. We knew that they just came back. This is the first page they hit by checking their CGI variable scope. And now we can say, would you like to complete your purchase or would you like to continue shopping? It allows us to customize the user experience. This is another administrator setting. We can also set it within our application.cfc to override, and also in our application.cfm if we're still using those. So these sessions will last by default until you tell them that they are no longer around, in which case they'll be destroyed. When you're using a session variable, you do have to use a session.prefix before the variable name. URL variables. If any of you guys have been programming long enough to remember when forms used to do a get as opposed to a post, Google actually still does this. When you search Google, not connected to the internet. Let's take a look up here at the top. A lot of times what you see is question mark name equals Nick, ampersand age equals 28. These are called URL variables on a query string, everything after the question mark. And all they are name value pairs that I can pass through to my template that's going to be executed, whether it be an action page or whatnot. URL variables are neat in that they're very easy to use. They're also dangerous in that all I have to do is since it's available to your user and your user can see what's happening, let's say instead of passing an age, I passed an ID through here, and it's an ID of 1. I'm passing this to a page where I can change my password. Well, if I am a malicious user and I change that to 2, I now have access to whoever's ID is 2's record, or 3, or 4. So we want to be careful what we're passing in the URL scope. Just a quick aside there. URL variables are available in any template across the entire request. They're only going to stay around for the current request, so if it's something that we need to persist, we may want to think about putting it in a session or putting it in a client variable. URL variables do not have to be prefixed when you refer to them. And the kind of catch-all variable scope is called variables. If you've been writing ColdFusion programs and you haven't been scoping your variables, you've been using the variable scope by default. It's the ColdFusion default scope, so if I do a CF set x equals 1, that's now the same as saying variables.x equals 1. Works both ways. You don't have to prefix this scope, and it's available just to the current template for the current request. It's like a local variable in other languages. Let me give you guys a caveat here now that I've gone through and said prefix required on each of these or prefix not required. It's very important, although you don't have to scope your variables, that you do scope your variables. ColdFusion has a certain order in which it looks for. So say if I just have, like we were doing back here on line 15, I'm telling ColdFusion to output Z. Well, I didn't tell it to look in variables.z. It just so happens that variables is the first scope that ColdFusion checks. So variables.z, it found it. It's going to output that for me. Let's say it was a form variable. Well, ColdFusion is going to keep looking because it didn't find it in the variable scope. Now it's going to look for it in the URL scope. Well, it's not in the URL scope. Now ColdFusion is going to look for it in the next scope, the form scope. It finds it in the form scope, but it had to do several iterations to get there. So if you have large programs which are accessing a lot of data, you've now slowed down your program. It's going to be performing a little bit more poor because you didn't take the time to scope your variables. On the same note, if you have other developers that you share your code with, you definitely want to be scoping your variables. Let's say you're looping over a query somewhere. You haven't prefixed that with the query name. So if I had myQuery.price like we had before, I just had price. I now don't know, did that come from a form? Did that come from a local variable? Where did it come from? And I now have to start reading back through the code to figure out what you were doing. If you just take the time to scope that variable, it really, really helps and makes a lot of sense when the next person comes to take a look. Yes? You know, I'm bad at that in that I don't. Guy I program with. It still does the same thing. Like, it doesn't slow my program down because it is the default. The only bad thing is if it's not scoped, the person has the question, where did it come from? It's probably something I should do, but I've been so in the habit of not doing it for so long. But if I was just starting out in programming, I would definitely say put variable scope in there. I don't know if any of you guys went and heard any of Simon Horowitz's presentations over the week. Very big in the community. He scopes every single variable everywhere. I don't care if he's writing a 5-line program and it's just adding 1, 2, and 3 together. He's going to scope that results variable as variables dot whatever the variable name is. And it is. It's an excellent, excellent name or excellent habit to get into. Okay. Scopes. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about conditionals. Conditional expressions are just really, really one of the most important parts of any programming language. It allows us to evaluate expressions. Conditional expression has to be evaluated to either true or false. If you're going to get your conditional to work, it must equal true in the end or false in the end. Otherwise, it won't process. Now, in ColdFusion, 0 is also going to be false. 1, -1 will evaluate the true. yes and no also work, but the end result always has to be that it can take that value you're showing it and it's going to come out true or false, so that it knows what to do within the conditional logic. Once it figures out if it's true or false, a different action will be taken for the true condition versus the false condition, hence the power of conditional expressions. Cold fusion gives us a tag called CFIF to evaluate these expressions. So CFIF, some expression, if this evaluates to true, whatever's an expression here, then we're going to do something. Otherwise, it's just going to exit the CFIF and it's not going to do anything. So let's say CFIF 1 equals 1. That's true. It's going to output do something or whatever little bit of code, HTML and Cold Fusion's in there. What if it was false? Well, it wouldn't do anything. So we have this CFLSIF. Maybe we want to say if 1 equals 2, do something. If 2 equals 2, do something. This is where we start building more complex conditional statements. It allows us to add additional conditions. So we have a CFIF expression. If it's true, it'll do something, and it just ends that whole CFIF block. If the expression were false, it would then go down in ELSIF. ELSIF, if this other expression is true, then we're going to do something else. If that is also false, then nothing's going to happen here. Okay, so let's whip over to some code here real quick. Let's just set x equal to 1. CFIF x equals 1. Okay, so our code from line 12 to 14 here says if x is equal to 1, which it is, so we should expect this to be evaluated to true, we're going to output hello world. We'll actually get to that in a couple pages here. And x was equal to 1, therefore we now have that little bit of code. This could be very complex code in here. In this case, we're just doing a hello world. If x equals 2, we get nothing because x does not equal 2 and we have no other conditions, so it just simply exited the CFIF loop. Let's check out CFLSIF. Okay, if we look at our logic, CFIF x equals 2, we're going to output hello world, else if x equals 1, goodbye world. And since the first condition was false, we went down and evaluated the second condition, which was true, and we executed goodbye world. Now what if both of these are false? If both are false, we now once again get nothing. Well, generally, you'd like to show some sort of a default. So Cold Fusion has another tag that belongs inside CFIF called CFElse. I like to call this the catch-all condition. If this is not true, and if this is not true, and if this is not true, CFElse. So we're going to catch everything. We're going to have like the universal true. Then we're going to do this. It will handle the false condition of the block. So right now we're outputting nothing. So if I do a CFElse, it's going to throw a CF output around here so that we can actually output the value. We have CFIF x is equal to 2, we'll say hello. Otherwise, if x is equal to 3, we'll say goodbye. Otherwise, if it's anything besides 2 or 3, we're going to just output the value of x. And I messed up my CF output. So the value was 1. That's our catch-all condition. If the value was 15, it would have caught this. If the value was anything, it would have caught this, besides 2 or 3. That's conditional logic. Cold fusion gives us something called CF switch and CF case. Very similar to other programming languages. I like to follow a thing called the rule of 3. If I had in my code here, I wanted to do one thing on Monday, one thing on Tuesday, one thing on Wednesday, a different thing on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, for every day of the week, what I would have to do in a CFIF block is I would have to have, 7 CF else's. And that gets a little bit confusing, number one, and it also takes processing time. Because if this was, X equals Monday, X equals Tuesday, X equals Wednesday, it has to process them in order. So if this is false and we're looking for Saturday, this is false, it's Monday, this is false, it's Tuesday. It actually has to iterate each loop in the order that we have it programmed before it will finally give us our, the correct answer, the correct output that we want. Well, that's all well and good, except if I have a very complex loop, I would much rather go by the rule of threes, which is if I'm going to be checking more than 3 values, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday would be fine. As soon as I add in that Thursday, I want to get away from CFIF and I want to start using CF switch. CF switch is simple. I have an attribute called expression. Expression is the value I'm checking, so it could be X. I then have CF cases. CF case takes 2 attributes. It's going to take the value, which would be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whatever, and also delimiters. Delimiters could be, I think by default it's comma, but we could be tab delimited, we could be delimited with a pipe, whatever. If any of the values is true in the CF case, then we're going to execute that HTML and CFML within that CF case block. We also have what's called a default case. It's like our CF else that I showed you in CFIF. If none of the cases are true, then I'm going to execute whatever's inside that CF default case. You don't have to have the CF default case, but I like to put it there just in case eventually I would want it. Just leave it blank. It's just a good habit to get into. So let's take a look here in code. I'm going to pass through Monday as my expression that we're going to check against. Put in my default case, even though we're not going to use it. Oh, thank you. Okay. So what just happened was CF case, or CF switch says I'm looking for this value somewhere in one of my CF cases. So if I had 20 CF cases here, and say this was Monday, Tuesday, the second one is Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, what it does is opposed to going down through and hitting it in the exact order like we would have had to with a CFIF, is it's going to find the best match just like that, and it's only going to execute that bit of code within that CF case. So what it's doing is it's improving our performance, so if I had 100 different cases there, it's only going to take a split second to decide which case matches and just handle that case. that case block and just output that case block. And if it didn't find anything there, it's instantly going to come down to our CF default case, and it would then execute whatever code or HTML we have inside of our default case. So that's a CF switch. If you're following the rule of threes, anytime we have a CF if and two CF else ifs, we probably want to be taking a look at CF switch. You can also nest CF switches. So since I can put any kind of anything inside of here, I could then start checking other values in another CF switch. And I can go to ad nauseum. Okay. Now the operators. Why was I using equals or EQ when I was checking for my true-false condition, for my default condition? In other languages, we're able to use things such as equal signs, greater than, less than. ColdFusion doesn't allow us to do this for a pretty smart reason. ColdFusion sees the equals as an assignment operator. If I was going to, in, let's say, JavaScript, if I wanted to see if two values were equal, I would set it to equal equal. ColdFusion doesn't think like that. So it knows that when it sees an equal sign, it's supposed to instantly say, set whatever's on the left to whatever's on the right. So instead of using the equal sign, we're going to use is equals or EQ. It kind of takes the place of equals. Less than. In JavaScript, I can use the less than sign. We can't do that in ColdFusion because ColdFusion is a tag-based language. If I wanted to say if X is greater than Y, go to code here, CF if X is greater than Y, do something. You notice it closed out my tag right here. It sees that as the end of the tag. So that's why we have to kind of get away from the greater than and less than signs. So, seems as though we have about 5 minutes left here. Instead of the less than sign, we're going to use LT. Instead of, you know, less than or equal to, LTE or LE. Greater than is GT. GTE and GE is greater than or equal to. Is not an NEQ for not equals. Contains and does not contain are ColdFusion specific. They simply tell if a string contains a substring and it will return a Boolean value. In conclusion, variables are changing. We don't know what they are at runtime. Okay, that's why we're using them as a variable. Variables give context and constraint to variables. Without a name value pair, we have no idea what 42 is, or we have no idea what Nick is, until I assign it to my name. And now as a programmer, I know what that is, and I can begin using that as a name. I definitely recommend that you guys experiment with these complex values, such as arrays, one and two dimensional arrays, structures, arrays of structures. And definitely you're not going to be able to get away from the query type that I explained. You'll be using that often if you're talking to a database. This is going to make your coding so much easier, because something that would take 20 steps to do if you weren't using an array or a structure, all of a sudden will be a very concise loop that you can just loop over this structured data. Remember that ColdFusion is loosely typed or weakly typed, but it's not untyped. When ColdFusion evaluates a variable, it's going to try and retype it if it's not in the correct type, but it is going to have a type. It will be a string, an integer, a query, a something. Conditionals allow us to execute commands, and it's always going to be based on the true or the false Boolean expression that is returned by the expression we're using in our CF if or in our CF switch. I'm sorry? Yeah, that's the last slide. We're just about there. So now you guys have like the basics for kind of a ColdFusion, 101 overview of variables, of conditionals. What do you do next? I strongly suggest you go start looking at ColdFusion tags and functions on the live docs, on adobe.com. Definitely look at the complex data type functions. When I started programming, of course, I was self-taught, and I had just a mess of things I was doing very, very wrong that Cold Fusion already provided functions for. So go check them out. Also, my company AboutWeb does training. We have a fast-track to Cold Fusion class, which will take what you've learned here and just really expound upon it. You'll be creating applications by the time you get back to your work. That's our goal. It's an Adobe certified. You get an Adobe certificate at the end of the class. We also offer customized classes, so we can tailor that class to your specific application that you're building. If you want to reach me, you can go to www.nicktunney.com. And Nick is spelled N-I-C. There's no K. That's my blog. I talk an awful lot about Cold Fusion variables, also objects. I'm very large and I have a few products out there. And if you're interested in training, it's www.aboutweb.com or training.aboutweb.com. And they've given me the official stop, so I want to thank you guys very much for being here. If you have any questions, feel free to pick up a card. You can email me at any time or hit me on my blog. Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.